You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved. Leaving work in a mood? Time to change that with Overdrive.
So I was at a birthday party from 11:30 to about 2:30.
What? Well, they are gutless if you said no. What do you have to go for?
Because
was
there
it a kids' party?
Yes, it was
a kids' party. 38 under, no balls open.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, will join us in a moment. I believe Ray was in Colorado for that game last night, where Nathan McKinnon put on another clinic.
He's putting a show on. That top line put a show on.
He is outrageously good. Like, he is on another level right now.
Well, they can't stop him.
No.
Like,
no.
They have no idea how to stop him in particular, but the whole line's been great.
You're Conn Smythe right now. Would it be McKinnon or would it be Mark Stone?
McKinnon, overtime winner, 2 goals last night, set up the kid.
Plus, the team's different, too. Colorado's different than Vegas, right?
Vegas is a really good team. Yeah. That was a tougher, like, a more equal matchup, correct, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, Colorado's a wild card team, second wild card team.
Yeah, and a team that really is top heavy when you look at it. They work their butts off, though. They've outworked Calgary. Like, that's the one thing in watching that game last night. Now, Goudreau hasn't gotten that much good looks. Their top players haven't played very well. But McKinnon's on another level, another planet, speed, strength, all of that. But Colorado has worked their butts off. Their D, that Ian Cole's jumping up in the play like he's Letang.
Honestly, he looks like Paul Coffey.
Yeah.
This guy's on breakaways in the playoffs.
Calgary's allowed that, and
I got a little bit of a nervous feeling for Calgary.
Well, they're not playing well. You can't play like that. Think of the nervous feelings going around the league right now. Pittsburgh, Tampa. Who else am I missing here? Winnipeg, down 2-1.
San Jose. Jumbo.
Like, there's some really good teams from the regular season.
Is Boston nervous?
Not right now.
You're down 2-1. There's experience, but I think they have to at least take notice and be like, hey, we're not. This isn't a cakewalk. This is a, you know, if this was a coin flip going in, we know what this team's capable of.
I don't think they go into even full panic mode if they get down 3-1. They understand they're in a tough position, but I don't think they ever go into full panic. They were down 4-1. I know it's a different group in the third period with 11 minutes left.
Different era. I would say different era, personally. But you're right. Like, they've seen a lot of things. I think they have to take notice. Like, I don't know if nerves is the word. I don't even know if Winnipeg's nervous. I think Winnipeg believes they should have a better fate. Bennington's been really good there. If I'm San Jose, I'm a bit nervous. I don't think they've played well. I don't think they've gotten stops. But it's just, to me, it's lazy narrative to go, well, Martin Jones isn't making saves. You watching Eric Karlsson out there? Like, Karlsson,
well, they had a great game one. Great game one.
Stat the other day, I think Karlsson's been on for 11 out of 13 goals against. That's not on him. Not all on him. But
11 out of 13, there might be something wrong.
You're right. But if you look at it, they score 16 seconds into the game. Mark Stone the other night scores 16 seconds into the game. Karlsson, I don't know why he was outside the dots. He was so wide on the play. And Couture just lets Stone go down the middle. Like, these are just missed assignments. And then the goalie doesn't make a save.
Well, it was a heated game, though. Like, game three, there was a lot of animosity. That's why Thornton got suspended. And Evander Kane and Ryan Reeves fought towards the end of the game. I heard Mike Johnson. Johnny was on Leafs Lunch today, and he's calling it for NBC. He's been going back and forth. And he said he was between the benches, and Reeves was right by the glass, and Kane was right by the glass. And he said they were going nonstop at each other, like beaking at each other for 10 minutes. He said they were just chirping and, you know, talking smack. And finally they decided to go, and I got all the time in the world for Evander Kane to fight a guy like Ryan Reeves.
Absolutely.
Who is, I believe, considered the...
I think he's the heavyweight champion of the NHL.
Right. Pound for pound, league, toughest guy in the league is Ryan Reeves, or at least from a heavyweight perspective.
Right there.
This guy, and they were throwing bombs at each other, and I thought Kane did a pretty good job of holding in, but I think he's got a death wish here, because he spoke with a media member down in San Jose. And Evander Kane, because I thought Reeves won the fight. Like, Reeves got more punches.
But he's
in.
A schooled fighter, where Kane...
I thought Kane held up.
No, but like, correct me if I'm wrong. Does Evander Kane not have a little bit of a boxing background or something? I know the Mayweather picture and that. But I think there's something where he knows what he's doing. Like, he's a...
He's a big kid, outside too. He's built like a brick.
The off-ice and the person... Like, as a player, just as a player, Evander Kane, I think he's a hell of a player.
Yeah, he's an old-school kind of throwback, power-forward type guy. And this is what he was speaking with a media member in San Jose.
Who's that?
Guy by the name of Shang Peng.
Yes.
I don't know where he works or where he's at. But anyway, he got this quote. This is the quote of the hockey world right now, because I don't think it was up anywhere. We're looking for the audio and the video. We can't find it. He was asked, he asked Evander Kane, you know, about his fight with Ryan Reeves. And Kane said, quote, "For the so-called toughest guy in the league, I don't know if he landed a punch. At times I thought I was fighting the Muffin Man. I did not expect that. I expected more of a battle." End quote. So
I love the, like, he's got some jam to say that.
Well, and he's also...
Next year in November, late November, he'll become knocking again.
Well, there's a couple of things I would say about that quickly. One, Reeves took a real shot at Thornton, saying, "I know that's a buddy ridiculous. who's got a grandpa who lost his vision." That's what it's. This is what I think the response is.
Yeah.
All right, you're going to take a shot at Thornton and think you're so funny and so cool, and I'm going to go right back at you, because Kane's face knows that he's not the Muffin Man. He got punched a few times in the face.
I'm sure.
Like, Ryan Reeves got a couple of punches in on him.
Yep.
But it's gamesmanship. You know, it's acting a bit hero-ish, so to speak. But Reeves is the king of it.
Jumbo plays next year, which I would assume might be his last year. Mid-March, he could whack his stick right over his head and say, "Oh, I'm willing." Because that was the classic veteran move. I'm done. After this year, I'm willing to be done on you. So just be careful. I'll break my stick over your head multiple times. And I'm willing to walk away because I'm done anyway.
Yeah, I'll go out on you. I've heard that a few times. Not on me, but I mean, I've heard that yelled at the bench.
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. I don't know if you saw that quote, Ray, from Evander Kane calling Ryan Reeves the Muffin Man. What do you make of that?
Pretty ballsy. You know, like Kane can fight, right? He's long trained in as a boxer. He's his dad was a boxing guy, and as a kid all through Bantam and Junior, and as he got into be a young pro, he's always been kind of interested in this stuff. But you're fighting a boy that's a big boy, man. Ryan Reeves he's a scary guy, and I thought he did really well. And I also thought he kind of stuck his chin out for Thornton thereafter as well. And Reeves is kind of gets to, because of his strength and his size and the way he plays, he kind of marauds around, right? Like, he can do whatever he wants. Who's going to do anything to him? There's nobody left, not like at that size. And so I think Kane's saying enough, basically. You can't say that about Thornton. And I kind of liked it, but yeah, I'd be looking over my shoulder just all the same.
Ray, you love chirping. Aren't those comments going, like, it's a little bit much, isn't it? Or is that in the world of chirping?
You mean from Reeves?
I thought the Reeves one was way worse. Like,
what I'm talking about, the Reeves comments.
About, like, Joe Thornton saying, I got a buddy whose grandpa is losing his sight. Like, that's just stupid.
Well, to me, Gordon Miller has this line. He's like, leave comedy to the comedians. It's hard to do. You know, like, Reeves is trying to be funny, but it's not funny. Like, it's not anything. It's just, whatever. And I think Kane said that somewhere in there. He said, I'm sure when he's done, you know, he'll be in the WWF or WWE, and, you know, that won't be very long anyway. That's the bottom part of the quote. And I didn't, the chirping stuff, like, I thought that was for the ice. It wasn't for this.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be witty or something. That's not it. The other thing too is that he meant, as I'm thinking about it, he said, you know, he's talking about his vision, and the guy's got 1500 assists. He must have some vision.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's the thing. Like, all Joe Thornton has to do is say, you know what, when I'm done this season, I'll sign a stick and send it over to you. Because that's, I mean, Ryan Reeves, from a hockey standpoint, could not carry Joe Thornton's stick. That's really like if
Ryan Reeves knows that.
But if Thornton wanted to be a dink, he could say, you know what? Like, I'm sorry, I don't know who you are. I really don't. Like he could come off with a layer of arrogance. Now Joe Thornton deserved that suspension. It was a bad hit. You know, the league stepped in. He got what he deserved. But, you know, to be a hero on that, I know it's gamesmanship, but I agree with you, Ray. I don't know where now it started to spill into the media instead of between the benches.
It's been out there for a while, though. Remember Brandon Prust? Remember Prust and his comments about Paul McLean calling him a fat walrus and all that?
Like, well, even Patrick Waugh and Jeremy Roenick. Isn't that the Stanley Cup?
Right. But that, yes, but that was, you're right. But Roenick said something about his, I don't remember the context of it all, but that was between the two of them. Right. Like Reeves, if Thornton hit Reeves, I could understand why Reeves would be like, you know, okay, I got a problem with this guy. Reeves wasn't on the receiving end of it.
You're right.
Like, who, you know, you're not even involved in the play.
Yeah, it's him just, I guess, him standing up for a teammate, then Evander Kane standing up for a teammate, so then they end up going.
Right. But, I mean, at least through animosity.
We'll just be happy that they give us some entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. It's content, man. That's the business we're in. Who wins the fight, Ryan Reeves or Alex Ovechkin?
Whoa.
Yeah, yay. How about that last night, eh? Wow.
That was tough to watch.
I don't know what you guys felt, but I didn't feel great watching it. Like, you know, like as they're flailing away, I'm like, oh, my God, look at this. And then, oh.
Yeah.
Ray, he decided to fight. And I know the result was ugly, but he made the decision that he was going to do it.
Well, here's the thing.
Oh, you mean about for the people that are saying Ovechkin should have skated away because he's older and stronger and heavier and...
Yeah.
That's... Like, if you're in the game, you're in the game for all of it. Nobody says, you know what, I shouldn't have hit that guy because I'm way stronger than him and I'm older than him.
No.
I saw some people, again, it's the moral compass on Twitter. Well, he's just a kid. He's 19. Who cares? He's got an NHL jersey on. Well, so if he's only 19 and you want to protect him, either Carolina doesn't play him because he's too young, or the NHL, they're not going to put a yellow jersey on him and say, okay, he's young, don't hit him. And the kid asks him for a fight.
Well, he instigated the whole thing.
He was being a hero with a stick, and they were jousting, and he skates right towards Ovechkin and says, let's go. So Ovechkin knocks him out. Unfortunately, you hate to see that, but the narrative, oh, he's just a kid, what an idiot, obvious. No, how about a 19-year-old challenging a guy who knocks his head off? That's the idiot move.
Well, I mean, it's not exactly the same thing. So should players shoot less hard on Carter Hart because he's 20?
Agreed.
You're in the league. You got the big boy jersey on, and that's the way it is. He made a terrible decision, as it turns out. But the people that are saying that Ovechkin shouldn't have fought him, or when, you know, Ovi dropped his gloves first, well, if you're going to be in a fight, why would you try to drop them second? The other guy's going to punch you in the face if you're not ready. At some point, when you're, and trust me, I lost almost every fight that I was in. You know you're going to be in a fight and there's nowhere to go. Like, you're either, at that point, you might as well go.
Right.
Right? Like, yeah, there's no point standing around anymore. Ovechkin must have, you know, as they're gabbing at each other in Russian, they know that they're going to go. And he got his gloves off first, but Svechnikov's flailing away too.
Yep.
Well, exactly. I mean, Ovechkin, I think the last time he had a fight was in 2010,
I want
to say.
Four career fights.
Yeah,
he's not
a fighter. In a way, I have more of an issue with Ryan Reeves accepting a fight with Kane, who Evander Kane's a big boy and can take care of himself, but he's $7 million player, 30 goal scorer.
Yeah.
Like, Reeves is a fourth line fighter, tough guy.
Right.
Like, that's who he is. Evander Kane is not.
Right.
Svechnikov is going to be up for the rookie of the year, second overall pick.
Yeah.
He is closer to Ovechkin's category than Reeves is Evander Kane's category.
He's a hell of a player, Svechnikov, and I think he's going to be a great player in this league. I agree with Ray. I think he made a bad decision. He allowed his emotions to get the best of him. And Ovi can't. This is the playoffs, and he challenged him. You never want to see that result. I think we all felt the same way. You don't like to see somebody injured and laying on the ice and needing help off. But all of a sudden, the narrative can't be like, well, he's just a kid.
Well, talk to Rod Brind'Amour then.
I know Rod's got to protect his team, and that's what he was doing.
It was really took me my second fight to pick the wrong door. Showcase number 4 was the wrong one for me. I thought Sheldon Surrey was a skilled puck-moving defenseman from the Quebec League.
Well, he wasn't from the Quebec League. He was a skilled defenseman.
He's a mountain man from Vancouver who kills bears with his hands.
Which right hand told you that it was the wrong play?
He just grabbed me and he goes, I don't want to fight you. And then 2 punches, I was out for 6 weeks with a neck injury. Some guy put the fight on Twitter today, and it was not good.
I read something today on Twitter that the first Russian to fight in the NHL fought Rod Brind'Amour.
Really?
There you go.
And I was like,
which is who?
I'm like, whoa, that's kind of crazy, like a full circle sort of thing. The other thing I would say about the fight is, like, there's really, it, not, of course, very often, but there's the potential for that in any fight. And the guys know it, and nobody ever really thinks about it, but that, seriously, you could get tagged on the button in any fight and you end up in the position Svechnikov was.
Yeah.
So if it's so outrageous, then they need to push to have fighting eliminated. And in the meantime, this is always going to be a possibility when two guys fight.
Yep.
All right.
With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, I don't know how much of the Maple Leaf game you got to catch.
Almost all of it, because the Central games, they start like at midnight.
Right. I thought it was a great game. I was there, and you were in the building. Noodles, you obviously watched it. We all saw it. You know, it was a really high-paced, quality game, but it felt more like game one than game two. The Leafs, I thought the Maple Leafs, big boys, their top 6 forwards, their top 4D, and their goaltender were a little bit better than the opposition, and they deserved to win last night. What did you make of it?
Pretty much the same. I think it's fascinating because they play the game, the two teams, a little bit differently, right? And that who's ever able to control a bigger chunk of the game with their best guys is going to probably win. And one looked like 3, and 2 looked completely different. I thought the Leafs were terrific last night. The first period, and watching that, I was like, man, this is, you know how some games just jump out like that's a playoff game? Mm-hmm. Like, some of them have been a little scrambly, and they're all more intense and more physical and faster, but the game last night to me looked like there was a potential for goal almost all the time. Like, somebody was close to making a play a lot of the time, and the Leafs, I thought that's as good a game. I think they were better in game 3 than game 1.
I agree.
Like, I thought they were fantastic last night.
Well, we were doing a bit of retrospective analysis, which is always going to happen, halfway through a round, and it could change tomorrow. You know, the whole tone of the series could change tomorrow. Boston rolls out and plays like they did in game 2 and takes over the game. And, it's going to be a roller coaster. It's going to be a long series. But prior to the series, the Bruins were favored. They deserved to be favored based on home ice, based on their history, the way they played. And we were kind of picking away at the Maple Leaf carcass a little bit in terms of the regular season, which I think was deserved because of the way they played down the stretch. They didn't play well really into the new year all the way to the end of the year. But you look at a couple of things that have developed here. I expected the Bergeron line to be, dominant again, because that's what they did last year. That's what they've done for 2 years. They haven't. They've been outplayed. Like, it hasn't even just been a saw-off. John Tavares, Zach Hyman, Mitch Marner have simply been better across the board, and specifically in game 1 and definitely last night. And I'm not sure we made a big enough deal of that, Ray, the idea that John Tavares is going to be able to take down Patrice Bergeron, and that's what he's done. He's really neutralized him. And we mentioned it earlier, the stat was up last night. With that win, with them holding on to a third period lead, they're now 38-0-1 when leading after 2. So, for a team with defensive warts, and they've had them all year and they still do, they got a lead going into the third. They're doing something right. And we didn't really bring that up a lot either leading into the series.
No, I don't. Actually, I don't even recall us talking about it. I don't even really recall anybody talking about that stat. That's an amazing number to have. I wonder if, how long Bruce Cassidy goes tomorrow night with Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak. If they're not getting anything going, does he drop Pastrnak to Krejci's line to, you know, try and get a little bit out of him and away from the Tavares group? And, you know, like, they're Boston's at a point here. You can only wait so long before you might have to make what would be a pretty seismic change to your lineup. Like, the Tavares and Marner and Hyman have, you know, by miles have been the least best line this year. And they're, I guess we didn't even talk, you know, I guess we talked about the least center ice position as a group, not as individuals, more so. At least that's what I feel.
Right.
Is that we talked about, man, how are you going to match this depth? We didn't talk about that Tavares has played against the number one guy forever in New York. He's done it his whole career. And so why wouldn't he be doing it here, and why can't he be successful here? I'm really surprised that Boston's got nothing out of that top three. Like, just on the power play, nothing at 5-on-5. And the simple answer is, unless they get it, they're not going to win.
There was an idea.
Like, Toronto will win, right? Toronto will win if that Boston line can't find a way to get on track.
Cassidy was asked, will you break them up? How do you break that lineup? They're gonna do it sooner or later.
Well, he doubled down on Pastrnak in the second period, moved him down for a second shift. I think it was with
then he was
Nordstrom.
Right back
and,
with him.
No, I know.
He moved him around a little
he
bit.
Moved
though,
he moved him around a little bit just to try and get him away from matchups and maybe get his confidence going. He's had a couple looks. I told you, Brian, I thought Freddie made a really good save in the first period on Pastrnak in tight where he kind of tried to sell it. He was going high, and then he rolled his wrist, and Freddie had the paddle down. I thought it was a really terrific read by Anderson, and Pastrnak looked a little frustrated on the play. Outside of that, Anderson had a couple real big timely saves, but he didn't have to factor in that much. But you look at Pastrnak's looks, they haven't been clean. They haven't been from outside of that one. They weren't from, you know, inside the home plate.
I think that's Jake Muzzin, too.
You're
Muzzin's
right.
Really factored in on shutting him down.
He had one on the back door in game one where it was a seam play, and he hit the side of the net. But there haven't been those repeated, like, hey, this top line's got him hemmed in, and three and four looks, and you just feel like it's coming. That's a tribute to the defensive play of the Leafs. And all five guys, not just the D. I think the centerman's done a real good job on Bergeron to the point where he's making mistakes. Like that, was it Matthews' goal or was it Janssen's goal where Bergeron had it on his backhand and Krug had it too?
Matthews' goal.
Matthews'
yeah,
goal.
Yeah, Bergeron had it. He could have cleared it.
And he didn't get
it
up.
On him. Yeah.
There, but so that's where I think you start, but you're not married to that line, even though they're an amazing line, for too long. Because if you split them up and you get Pastrnak with Krejci, then you've got to make a decision Toronto's way. Like, who are you going to play? You're going to play Tavares against Bergeron because they still got Marchand there, and then you're going to have Pastrnak with Krejci, who's had a really good season and scored the other night. And they're going to be against Matthews. Do you feel like you can get more chances by doing that? They've got to try something if they don't get a spark early, I think.
Well, that is the story out of Boston. I was reading some stuff this morning. It's all about the top line not getting points. You know, just simply not factoring in 5-on-5, which, again, was a big part of the storyline leading up because they've been so good for so long.
Yeah.
I guess it's like any team, though, isn't it? Like, if your top guys don't score, you can say you've got great depth. That's fabulous. But
right.
If your big guys don't score, like I did the Colorado game last night, Calgary's got nothing in the series from Goudreau and Monahan and Lindholm. And Nate McKinnon's running around like he's going downhill the whole time. Like, they can't stop him.
Yeah.
How good is he right now?
Oh, my God. He looks so strong. It's so fast. It's like I don't know what I'm more impressed with, his skating speed or how fast he stick handles while he's going 100 miles an hour. Like, his hands are so quick. He was amazing in the first period last night. That game was over then.
Yeah, it was.
Well, sticking with that theme, though, you look at a guy who's playing tonight in Steven Stamkos, who really hasn't done
he's
anything.
He's done nothing.
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 And, you know, if you don't get anything out of him, Hedman doesn't even play because he's injured. Kucherov suspended. You know, we mentioned it yesterday. Pittsburgh's playing tonight. Crosby's got no points. You know, like, if, to you, your point, what you just said, Ray, if you don't get something out of them, you're just not going to be able to win. But Sid's got three cups. You know, Sid's won his MVPs. Stamkos hasn't.
Sid gets the old, maybe next year he'll
right.
come through.
Like, Stamkos, yeah. This is a legacy moment for him. Like, if they go out in the first round, he is the guy people are going to say, what was that? Where were you?
How about if you get swept?
If you get swept, even worse.
Yeah, best regular season team ever.
Doesn't it look like comparables to Washington for years?
Mm-hmm.
They were the best team. They could never win. And they never blew the team up. And they stayed with it, and eventually they, you know, they win last year. But I thought when Tampa came in late in the year, I guess it was the first week of April, I thought Stamkos skated better than I'd seen him play in a long time. Like, his skating looked good again, and he scored he scored the shorty. Remember, he beat Anderson on the glove, and because before that, I got this thought: he's like a 3-point shooter in basketball. He gets to a spot, he stands there, and he shoots. Like, he doesn't create anymore. But then I watched him live there, and I'm like, wow, that looks like the younger Stamkos, the creator. You know, he'd create with his speed and with his shot, and people would back up, and he's a good passer. And then now nothing. Like, they must just be in shock in 5 days to be from the best team in, you know, 20 years or whatever to a team that's on the ropes here.
Well, and I'll admit, I did two of their games, Ray, in a pretty tight quarters of time. And I remember coming in here to these guys and raving about, saying, like, nobody's going to beat that team. There was nothing wrong with it. They're too deep in every area. And all of a sudden, Hedman's out, Kucherov's out, the goaltender can't make a save, the team's flat, Braden Point's dropping the gloves. The team is rattled. Columbus is just kicking their ass everywhere, physically and on the scoreboard, and they don't have an answer. And the coach is saying, "Yeah, it's a 5-alarm fire." Now we don't know what's like. They've got to find a way. I mean, now it's to a point where in Columbus they've got a warning to bring brooms into the. Did you see that today?
Don't bring brooms because it's a security risk.
Yeah.
Now there's a writer from Chicago, Chris Cooch, and. Yes. He had an unbelievable line today on Twitter. He said, you know, he quote tweeted the that Columbus thing, don't bring a broom. And his tweet was, but we will be firing a Civil War cannon at insane decibel levels.
It's so true.
It's a pretty good point.
That's
not a security risk.
No, not at all.
Half the building's
going deaf.
You're going
to walk out of there deaf. If they score seven, well, Luongo had a quote one time. He said he thought he was going to have a stress disorder because he was in goal and they scored seven times on him in there. He was freaking out.
It's a good point. Where are you tonight?
We're in St. Louis tonight, so we're about back and forth. So we got a game tonight here. So see if Winnipeg can even it up after a good game three, and then in the morning fly back to Denver for game four there.
All right, buddy. Enjoy it. Safe travels. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Talk to you then. Later.
There's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are back. Purchase any new vehicle and get a $500 gift certificate to Appliance Canada. Plus, get rates from 0%. Visit MapleToyota.com. Brian Windhorst from ESPN at 6:05 on the Raptors game tonight. The comeback by the Clippers last night. And today marks a big NFL anniversary and the biggest contract in NFL history. We'll tell you about that next. All right, Brian Windhorst from ESPN will join us in about a half an hour. I had a game two tonight. Raptors, Magic down at Scotiabank. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. It's not technically a must win, but you got to win this one. Like, I think the Magic are well aware, okay, we got one. We took back home court. We got a split. Right. Not that the Orlando Magic aren't going to show up ready to play tonight, but I think they're going to be expecting the Raptors to be firing on all cylinders.
For sure.
It better be.
Yeah, I think the Raptors, you know, if they show up and play the way they should with the proper intensity, they start hitting more shots, they defend the three-point line a little bit better, Kawhi plays 38 minutes, I think it could be go time tonight.
Yeah, they got to get going, though.
Could be go time tonight. This morning on First Up, Landsberg and Koliakovo announced a Maple Leaf playoff keyword. And if you heard it, now is your chance to call. 416-870-1050. 416-870-1050. The first person through with the correct keyword will win a pair of tickets to see Game 4 tomorrow night. Maple Leafs Bruins down at Scotiabank. Wow, that's a big one.
Be a good one.
Massive giveaway. Chance for the Maple Leafs to take a 3-1 stranglehold over the Bruins, and you could be in attendance. Call right now at 416-870-1050. We had a Jerry's, I think it was last week, about Russell Wilson getting paid.
You know what? He is officially now the highest paid player in the NFL.
Yep.
And I thought, like, what the hell? But some of his stats almost back it up, do they not?
He is a legitimate, if not top five quarterback in the league, he's a top 10 quarterback. Okay,
well, he's not actually a top, he shouldn't be the highest paid player in the league if you want to go on the best players in the league. But I was looking at some of the stats, and they're incredible.
Off the charts.
Impressive. Yes. I don't view him as that.
Well, I think it's partially because of the market he plays in. But, I mean, they went to back-to-back Super Bowls, and he won a Super Bowl. Like, he was on that Seattle team. Now, they were known more defensively. I think that's also a part of it, that when Russell Wilson first got in and took the job, it was more about, you know, the Legion of Boom and Earl Thomas and, you know, Richard Sherman and all,
right,
you know.
Right.
That's what it was more about. Look at how strong this team is defensively.
And you just go out and make a couple plays and make things happen.
Exactly.
You had the running back who was doing everything, Marshawn Lynch,
exactly. Yeah. He had beast mode with him, right? He threw the pick.
So they made it look
against
like
the Pats in the Super Bowl, and it was like, oh, that's not a good look for him.
They made it look like it was the team that propped him up.
Right.
It's still incredible to think about.
How they didn't feed Marshawn Lynch on the goal line to win the
Super
Bowl.
Wasn't that Pete Carroll, though?
That was Pete Carroll.
But wasn't that his decision?
Yes, it was. It wasn't Wilson's decision. Now, right. Russell Wilson, as a veteran, probably should have said, forget
Are
that,
you
man.
Kidding me?
I'm calling an audible here. They know we're throwing because it was Malcolm Butler, I believe, who jumped the play and picked right. off the ball in the end zone.
That's still, weren't we at your house?
Yeah, we're at my house. We were in my basement in the man cave at my house. And the Pats came out after, and they said, we knew it was coming. Like, we knew that it was going to be a play action, they were going to fake the run, and he was going to step back and throw a quick slant, which is exactly what he did, and he jumped it. Like, they played it to perfection, and that was Belichick in a nutshell, knew it was coming, they set up shop for it, and they owned them. But that was back-to-back Super Bowl appearances, I believe,
yeah.
And Russell Wilson was a part of both. He's had no offensive line, no weapons there in past years. He is a great, great quarterback, and you're right, he's not, based on merit, he shouldn't be the highest, like Brady should still be the highest paid guy in the league.
Right, right.
You know, if not, it's Mahomes based on what he did last year, or Aaron Donald or something like that. But it doesn't matter. It's when you come up and it's the leverage that you have. You know, it's the same thing, and we just saw it with Austin Matthews.
Right.
Like per year, based on where he's at, he got a better contract than Connor McDavid got.
Right.
But he came up later.
Yeah.
And he had leverage here. He's like, listen, you guys are going to have to pay me. I don't care that McDavid's better.
Right. This is just where we're at.
I'm your McDavid, and I'm up now, and this is what you got to pay me.
That's true.
And, you know, it doesn't matter what anyone else is getting paid. It's the leverage that you personally have in that moment. And Russell Wilson had 100% of the leverage.
And
there's nothing they could do.
And his value to his organization.
I don't know. For him to say, he came out and said, I want to be the highest paid player in the league.
Well, I think his agent intimated that, yes. But he knew it was going to be, he knew it was going to happen. He is the highest paid player in the league.
I know, but I don't think they had, like, I always think to myself, what if they had offered the player X? Would he have said, oh my God, I'm offended by that? It's like Nikita Zaitsev, if they said, we want to give you, he just got to the National Hockey League. They gave him a 7-year extension.
Yeah,
if they went up to Nikita and said, we want to give you a 2 or 3 year extension, would he have said, I'm so offended? He probably would have been jumping for joy, wouldn't he have?
Yeah, I would assume so.
I thought he played well last night.
I get it, but it's just an example.
It's not a 7-year extension word, but if they had gone
to him and said, 3 years, what do you think? You'll stay in the NHL for 3 more years. I think he would have been pretty happy.
I guess so, but he clearly had some sort of leverage. You know, I don't know what it was, but he had leverage.
No, I get it.
You know, and Russell Wilson had leverage.
I think that may have been a handshake agreement when he came over from the K. is, hey, you get here,
right,
we're going to fit you in, you play the first year, and then you've got an extension in place. That wouldn't surprise me if that's a Mark Hunter special.
I don't think you're wrong.
The behind-the-scenes handshake deal, wink, wink, you know, because they found him. They didn't, you know, I mean, he was playing at high levels, and he was playing in the K, and had played in the Worlds. Like he had,
but other teams wanted him, too. They had offered
there was
him deals.
A bit of, exactly. I think there was, you know, you come play, you're going to play for this, but the extension will be this. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if that was, you know, well within their right to do.
Yeah, you could be right.
But, like, that one, I think, was executed, because it kind of came out of nowhere. Wasn't it like, we've signed him, 7 years extension.
Yeah, it was in the summer. It was Lou that was still here.
But I think it was Mark Hunter that found him, like, from a scouting perspective. I could be wrong on that, because I think Babcock flew over to look at him and all that. And, you know, as hard as we are on him, he played very well that first year when he first came over.
Yeah, he did. I mean, listen, with the puck, it's not ever going to be a Picasso with him.
No.
But, you know, he's gotten the job done, too. He's gone up against the top line as well. You got to
get a good job last night of closing the cycle off. There was a couple times where that was the play. Mm-hmm. He executed it. He had support, got it out, and they moved on.
Yep, cleared the house a couple of times, especially late in the game.
All you need.
Today is the 19th anniversary of a big, big moment in the history of sports. You guys want to take a guess on what today would be, what today marks as the 19th anniversary?
Tom Brady being drafted.
That is correct. Tom Brady in the sixth round.
Where did you get that?
I saw it on Twitter today.
Oh.
All right.
Well, I still knew it. I mean.
Yeah. 198th pick, Tom Brady. That's got to be the greatest value pick in the history of pro sports.
Are you kidding me? Of course it is. There's nothing even remotely close.
No.
All I can think of is maybe Pavel Datsyuk and Zetterberg in the seventh round.
But they're not even
I know, but that's not, as not good Brady. As they are, they're that's how goats. Much in no. a different stratosphere they are.
Yeah, there isn't. Like,
there's nothing.
That would be like Tiger showing up at like 24 years old, like undrafted, or you know what I mean? Like, there's no
but there isn't.
But
yeah, no.
There's no.
Like, Mike Trout went late in the first round. He went in the 20s. But he still went in the first round.
Right.
You know, like, that's the only, like, that's the, I'm sure there are other baseball players. I'm sure, obviously, over the course of history, right, there have been, I'm sure, players who were drafted way later in the rounds. But Brady's the greatest. So we're talking, you know, Babe Ruth.
Right.
We're talking Wayne Gretzky.
Jordan, like,
we're
whoever.
Talking Michael Jordan, who went third overall in his draft. You know, it's not even close. There's nothing close to that type of a value pick.
Now, is it
Tom Brady?
Now, was Brady
awkward?
You can't
call it a value pick. It's the greatest draft pick in the history of draft picks.
But was Brady? Right. Well,
yeah, it is.
I would love to know what the scouting report on Brady at the time was.
He was unathletic. He was
right, awkward.
Bad body. Can't run.
Well, Mel Kiper Jr., I saw it. It's out there. Do we have that? Do you guys want to hear?
Yeah.
This was from the draft. This is Mike Tirico, ESPN, and Mel Kiper Jr.
Love
when the New England Patriots drafted Tom Brady 19 years ago tonight.
So an anxious time for so many football players who are college stars. Among the last six picks taken, a familiar name if you're a college football fan, Tom Brady, the quarterback who all he did was lead this football team, put them in the right position more times than not. And when he got pulled from the game and Drew Henson came in, Michigan football was not as good as it was when Brady was in.
No question, Mike. Smart experience. This past season, he cut his interception total from 98.5, tossed 20 touchdown passes, only six interceptions. Threw a touchdown pass and actually all 16 games he started against Big Ten opposition during his career. Accurate, it was a very catchable ball. He really knows when to take a little off as well. And that's the key, and he stands in that pocket very tough. He'll take a hit. Question's going to be mobility. Only runs a 5'2", 5'40". And, of course, when you have those edge pass rushers, you have to avoid the initial defensive end, the initial pass rusher. Can he do that at the pro level? Going to New England, Drew Bledsoe, his forte certainly isn't mobility. It's dropping back, throwing the football. Brady can do that, and certainly New England's offense already designed for Bledsoe. Now comes Brady. Can he overcome that lack of mobility?
Michael Bishop, CEO.
All right, so that was courtesy of, I believe, ESPN way back in the day, and the audio sounded horribly.
Well,
but I'll give credit to Mel Kiper Jr. I mean, he actually said he's a really good player. Like, he said his mobility is not great, but he kind of gave him
props.
Props, you know what I mean? So There you go. 19 years ago today. All right. Brian Windhorst will join us at 6:05. Bob McKenzie in studio. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm a cybernetic organism, living tissue over a metal endoskeleton.
Part man, part machine.
The Overdrive Man of Steel.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. And I'm saying, woo, I'm the man.
The Man of Steel is brought to you by Steel, a quality product built to last, priced to sell.
Nathan MacKinnon is my Man of Steel. He is playing like Superman right now. 2 goals and an assist on Makar's first goal in the... Does that count as his first NHL goal?
It is, but it's just in the playoffs. Yeah.
Playoff, absolutely.
Yeah,
but that's his first NHL goal, right? Like, next season in the regular season, when he scores, it's not going to be like, hey, grab the puck, that's your first goal.
It will be. They'll grab the puck because it's first regular season goal. But Makar steps in. This kid looks like he's going to be a player.
Well, he's on the power play, like first power play last night. In the third, he's just dancing around. Like, he looked great last night.
He is my Man of Steel.
Okay. Noodles, who do you have?
Mitch Marner. That's the epitome of, you know, stepping outside your comfort zone.
Such a Leaf lover.
Yeah, well, that's just what people
Mitch
call
Marner
me.
Mitch played great last night.
People call me. I've been labeled that.
Yeah, you're
no, listen, you're. Yeah, it was a great play. And you know, you give credit when it's due. I mean, he made a great play at the right time. That's a lethal shooter. And I guarantee you guys were there. I'm sure there was anxiety going, this is on Pasternak stick with seven seconds left. What are we doing here?
Yep. I don't think about it like that anymore. I just think if he scores, I have to stay for overtime and stay longer. That's the only thing I can get out of my head.
It kind of felt like overtime was inevitable at one point.
I thought that game, period at 3-2, it's coming.
Yeah, like I thought that game kind of deserved overtime, just how good it was. It was entertaining. It was a really good game, but, you know, it was good hockey for 60 minutes.
Yeah, I think you'll get one. I don't believe there was an overtime game last year.
In the first round? Or you
against
mean with the
Leafs and Bruins last year. I don't remember.
Yeah,
I don't believe so. But the year before, remember their first year against the Caps, 5 of the 6 games.
No, believe me, I know. And
I think
know,
or 4 of the 5 went to overtime
there,
or whatever.
Believe me, the other night, Calgary sitting there sleeping.
Right, well, that's a West Coast game. That's a tough
one. Fell asleep in the intermission. All of us did.
Speaking of the West, I'm going to go Pekka Rinne.
Yeah, he put a. How about that save on the back door?
40 stops last night. You know, Dallas, they were humming.
They were buzzing.
And Pekka Rinne, you know, he's a great goalie. Obviously, we know that. He won the Vezina. But they needed him last night, and they're up 2-1 in that series. And we got 4 games tonight. You're looking at Pittsburgh trying to survive, Tampa trying to survive, and then 2 big games out West with Winnipeg at St. Louis, and the Jets are down 2-1. And Vegas at home against San Jose, and the Sharks are down 2-1.
Yeah.
I feel better about Winnipeg bouncing back, getting a win tonight.
Although their coach said it's going to be a mood game. He didn't like the lack of intensity the last game.
Craig Berube, you're saying?
So when he says it's going to be a mood game.
I like that. I love it.
A mood.
Amp up the animosity. You know, just why wouldn't it? Those are two teams that are kind of heavy. They're bigger guys. They've got, you know, like Big Buff is he's getting angrier every single
Adam
game.
Adam Lowry, yeah, like they've got some players on both
there's
sides.
There's some big boys in that.
Yeah,
there's some size there. You're right. Mood and if Craig Berube could put the gear on, you know, he'd be right there.
Well, and I think Binnington, he was hung out to dry in Game 3.
Yeah, he was.
You know, he played really well the first 2 games, and Winnipeg just. They weren't going to lose Game 3.
Yeah, they were.
It wasn't even close.
Yeah,
I think you'll see a significant bounce back from St. Louis tonight. But 4 games? No, I don't feel good about Pittsburgh or Tampa. Even if they win tonight, I don't think they get back into the series. But I think it's imperative Winnipeg and San Jose do win tonight. You know, I think you got to get a split. You go down 3-1 against a team like St. Louis or a team like Vegas. I don't know if you're beating them 3 in a row.
I think that Tampa series can go 6. I think they win tonight, they win at home. It's game 6 that could be a spicy meatball.
Then you are in trouble if you're Columbus.
Getting some
you're moods, in a lot of trouble. Hour 3 coming up on TSN 1050 in Toronto and up on TSN 2. Brian Windhorst from ESPN will join us to tee up game 2 of the Raptors series, look around the NBA, and Bob McKenzie will be in studio. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 2. Brought to you in part by Alpine Credits. Own your home and need a loan? With Alpine Credits, homeowners get approved.